So far away, Lucas. It is time for another special edition of our podcast with a guest. The guest isn't here yet. They're not going to be here because they were here a month ago.
Yeah.
But for you guys watching and listening at home, they'll be here in about 15, 20 minutes after we've done the intro and explained what this is, right?
Yeah, they're not here yet, but they also have also already been here because we pre-recorded that part.
This still, I still don't know how to explain this in my own head. Why is this simple time difference messing me up so much? But yes, this is the Wiki Weekdays podcast. This is where myself and my good friend Lucas Holland.
Hello there.
Scott Lumps and Bretts of the internet for wikis on subjects we're interested in, bring them forward for discussion. We have a video series on the weekend that is more like, you know, personality driven, where it's like me and you bringing one thing we want to talk about specifically and putting lots of clips and stuff in. The podcast is more discussion driven.
It is, I always kind of like edit the videos going like, oh yeah, we have like more outright, I guess, kind of like humorous bits to put in clips for, but I guess like podcasting is just, it's a different game, right?
It's a different side of the same coin, the same really massive multi-sided coin, which is not a coin, it's a dice.
Yeah, so like I hope we're making podcasts that people like listening to as podcasts and videos people like watching as videos, and just like, we're doing our best.
Yeah, they're similar things, but they have like a slightly different intention. I said the podcast is more like discussion focused, whereas the videos on the weekend, Wiki Weekends, are more like focused on like just me or you, just sharing an interest or fascination we have for that particular week. And something we like to do on the podcast, at least the episodes where it's been recorded live, you can tune in each week to see those, is ask our audience who brought the best wiki forward for discussion. And we christened that which wiki won this week. And last week, Lucas, what were the two wikis we brought forward for discussion for our audience to vote on about which one was more interesting?
Well, the podcast name was, I believe, The Great Debate, 100 Wrestlers versus One Bowser, in allusion to, you know, 100 men versus one gorilla. And it was El Santo versus Super Mario RPG, which Super Mario RPG was my wiki, and El Santo, which is a luchador wrestler, was your wiki as well.
Yes, and who defeated who? Did El Santo continue his winning streak from beyond the grave like an absolute badass?
Well, now it makes me feel bad because you said from beyond the grave, but I'm afraid Bowser wins this battle.
To be fair, El Santo's probably got other stuff to do. Do you know El Santo's in like Coco? The Pixar movie set in the afterlife as like a skeleton wearing an El Santo mask.
Oh,
yeah, that's how famous they are. They're in, like, they've got a cameo.
Like, Coco's one of the best Pixar movies. Like, maybe top three, definitely like top five Pixar films. But like, god damn, we need to talk about Coco at some point.
We do. And if folks at home want us to talk about Coco, or would just like to offer some suggestions of things they think we'd be interested in or would make for an interesting discussion or video, you can go to our Discord, found link below, and just make those suggestions there, and also talk about the podcast you're listening to right now, or previous podcasts, or future podcasts if you're listening to this like years down the line.
Yeah, and of course, you know, you can listen on podcast services as well if you want to listen to the audio version, but you don't get to see whether I change my hair colour.
You also don't get to see our pet of the week, which is like our other gimmick where we bring on a pet submitted to us by a member of our audience. And this week it is Blue, who's going for dem bubbles.
Blue fitting like, with my theme for the week.
Hey, I'm wearing a blue Hawaiian shirt as well, don't worry about it. But
that's indigo, Carl.
That's a joke that people won't get. Don't make in-jokes, Lucas. I will beat you with a stick. Yes. You can see, like, Blue is doing exactly what I want from a Pet of the Week submission, where it is blurry, where you can see what's going on. Just the fact that, I don't know why it cracks me up so much, but pictures of blurry animals mid-doing something stupid.
It's great, right?
They make me crease, which is British vernacular and a colloquialism for laughing, as in like creased over laughing. And it's just about, it's like you could clearly tell that the dog's like halfway through the air, right?
Just annihilating bubbles on its way. And what is it that they said on the Pet of the Week here? So they said his name is Blue and he is on his lifelong mission to murder every bubble he encounters. And clearly, like, very much along that trajectory in this picture.
Yeah, it's like those great videos you see, like, people, like, just watering their garden with a hose, and you see a dog go, well,
well,
well, just grabs the hose. It's, like, so good. And if you think you've got a blurrier, funnier picture of your pet or an animal, like, if you can get a picture of a bird that flew past your window, and you want to submit that as Pet of the Week, you can do so by following the links you can find below.
Yeah, that's, like, Pet of the Week is a vague description of just something that sounds catchy for just funny animal picture of the week, right?
Yeah, and not a funny animal picture from the internet, one that you, the person listening to this, took.
Yes.
By yourself, because that's what makes it funnier. Because there's also a place in our Discord for funny pictures.
The thing we are more strict about is we want people to, like, take their own pictures, but it doesn't necessarily have to be your pet or a pet in general. Just
I don't have any examples. I don't think, like, what's the last time? Actually, no, I've got a picture of me, like,
just
when I saw
some pictures.
Well, that's it. I didn't take that picture. It was one of me feeding. Like, yeah, I was in the airport the other day. I was fucking pigeon in the airport near the Burger King. So where's he going? That's like the kind of picture you can take. Like, I was in the airport and I went through, like, the duty free fucking pigeon going to Burger King. What's he doing? Where's he going?
Yeah, I spotted someone walking into work the other day, and they looked, like, really strange walking. And I kind of half caught them as I was doing something else, and was like, "What are they doing?" And then the next thing I know, I see them just, like, flailing their arms, and there's a pigeon just flying out of the restaurant. They're just trying to chase it out.
If you got a picture of that, that could have been Pet of the Week.
It could have been.
I'm like, I'm all in on this gimmick. It's one of my favorite gimmicks we have for the channel. Like, if we could do it every week, like, if we got enough submissions to do it every episode of, like, the weekend ones, I'd do that.
Oh yeah, like, so if we had enough submissions to do it, like, pet of every single episode, including the Wiki Weekends, we'd absolutely do it. But, like, you know, it's one of those of, you know, obviously we're doing our best, and we try to have a bunch of people, like, submitting, but, like, I know that there's a limited number of pets, and people might feel awkward about resubmitting the same winners and stuff. So I get it. Don't worry. I'm not calling anyone out.
Yeah, no one wants to be that much of a braggart, right? It's like, if Blue's got Pet of the Week now, it's like, too busy catching bubbles. I get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we do appreciate everyone who submits a Pet of the Week and everyone who supports over on our Patreon. And Lucas, okay, That's a perfect segue for you to go into what?
The time where we tell people to not subscribe to our Patreon, right?
Yeah, don't do it.
Yeah.
Just find someone else who subscribes to it, message them and say, when you stop, I'll join in. So we keep them the exact same amount of people.
No, of course, it is for our shout-out tier on our Patreon. And we truly do appreciate everybody that supports us and helps, like, try to keep the lights on, so to speak, over here on Wiki Weekends, and just, we obviously have to make sure that we do, of course, shout out the people on our shout out tier on our Patreon,
which includes,
they are doing the heavy lifting, so to speak, but we of course know that none of this could happen without everybody. But that starts with Carl, as I find the names here again.
It's the last thing you posted on Discord, mate, come on.
I was on the Pet of the Week page. We're trying. But anyway, we start with M. Chambers.
Yes, and M. Chambers is followed closely, but not too closely, by Fallopian Starship Presents The Womb of Doom.
And then we have Kickin' Bucket enjoys the bit, but they are all subscribed to other patrons, so this long-winded name needs to be changed at some point.
Just to reiterate, yeah, the longer, funnier, more, like, obnoxious and difficult to pronounce your Patreon name is, the better for me, because I'm ready for a challenge. Like, send me the tongue twists, I'm all in. But the next name shout out is simply Tam McKee.
And then we have Lucille DeSteel,
followed closely by Marcus. Just Marcus.
And then we have B of Awesome, with, I believe, 6 B's following, but the Discord doesn't like to copy and paste that very well. But yes,
the B emoji is great.
6 little B's after that name.
The B army. The Barmy. They're going. The Barmy army. They're on the way. But next we have to shout out Woo's Williest Wonka.
And then we have Lorm de Llama,
Little Ghost. And finally,
Judge Dredd.
I just like to say it is the Judge Dredd. Just listen to his podcast where he's around, like, you know, his law master.
Yeah.
Just listening to podcasts. You know he's listening to podcasts under there, right?
I would.
Yeah. What else are you going to do between, like, you know, running over jaywalkers?
Well, If Mega City 1 is a mega city, that must be pretty large.
Here's the thing as well, right? Cause at some point, we're going to get the equivalent of a mega city. Do you want them to call, like, if they're like London becomes a mega city, do you want them to call it like Mega London? Or do you think we should rip off Akira and call it Neo London? What's cooler? See, Mega London or Neo London?
Neo London's cooler, but I don't think London is good enough to have earned, like, Neo, you know,
the prefix.
Modifier, like, the prefix, yeah, like, I think London is a shithole that doesn't deserve to exist as it is, let alone Neo London. Then.
So is a mega city, right? Well, okay, what about, like, Neo Doncaster?
No, Doncaster's maybe more of a shithole.
Neo Doncaster!
Like, if you turn to me and say, do you want Neo Liverpool? Absolutely.
London mega Liverpool.
Can go fuck itself.
What, Megapool?
Megapool sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
But that's it also it. Kind of sounds like there's a chance that we just got so corporate and capitalist that Megabus bought Liverpool as a city.
Oh, to be fair, Megabus. Like, you get to London for a pound. City. Get to the airport for a quid, you can't go wrong. But, you know, for the people on our Patreon, you are helping make episodes like this one you're listening to right now. Because this is, as mentioned, an episode with a special guest. And that special guest is a content creator called Jose. Simply, Jose, you can find them on YouTube by typing in Jose. And that is something we mentioned in the upcoming episode you're about to listen to. Of like, I was like, mate, well done on searching Jose on YouTube, bringing up your channel. That's some good work on those analytics.
That's a skill and a half to be able to get just a name, a single word name, that's just a name, as like SEO driven, to just be like, cool, I can Google or YouTube search Jose and that YouTube channel comes up.
Yes, and if anyone's wondering, well, what kind of content does Jose make? They are a video essayist primarily, but they do a variety of subjects. They're releasing a video essay on the subject of Mad Men, which is what this episode is about and the discussion you're about to listen to.
And I've watched it and it's really good. Just to clarify, it's already out as the time of recording the intro, but not a time of recording the podcast.
Has it not shown up in my subscription?
Apparently not, because I watched it. It was great.
Yeah, because I say, are we mentioned in it?
I don't remember being mentioned, because I think they recorded it at the time of us recording the podcast, and we're trying to get it through copyright.
Yes, but like, yeah, they are a very, very good video essayist. Like, I consider them to be the gold standard among like video essayists on YouTube, and if we ever reach the point on our Patreon where we will similarly create additional content, including scripted content and video essays, I will no doubt be using them as like the baseline for what I consider to be, you know, the level of quality I'd aspire to, if not for the length, because the video essays they do quite lengthy, like, you know, an hour, 2 hours long. But the level of research and the quality of the research and the analysis of the subjects that they're covering, I would definitely see that as like something to aspire to. And I'm like really, really happy that they came on, because like their video is the one that I like. The classic, just what's okay, I'm about to play a video game for 2 hours. Just give me the background noise.
Yeah, I just double checked that it was like 2 hours, 18 minutes, and 32 seconds, which is longer than most of our podcasts are.
Yes, and it's all like well-researched, very well-scripted, and just really interesting deep dives into various like pieces of media, including Mad Men, Malcolm in the Middle. They did one Xena. The Xena one was really good, because it's just like, I had no idea Xena was this in-depth in the creation of, like, I didn't realize Xena was this difficult to make, but holy shit, Xena. And like the fact as well, they fill it with so many high quality clips, which must be an absolute ball ache. They talk about that. Can't imagine how much of a ball ache it'd be to have to rip every episode of Xena from DVD onto your computer so you have access to all the footage and B-roll.
That thing as well is like, they you'll notice that they are replaced by like an image. They didn't want to record with video, and you know, we totally respect that. We give everyone the opportunity to be like, you can present yourself however you want to on the podcast.
Of course, yes.
And yeah, like, you'll notice that we just replace them with their logo, but they, you know, will heavily edit it so that you get a lot of like B-roll of everything they are carefully like talking about at all moments. And I can't imagine how much more difficult it is to make that kind of content than it is to just have your face on screen at most times, because we can just use us talking.
Yeah, like the idea of how much B-roll they must do, and obviously the conversation you're about to listen to is primarily about Mad Men, but we do delve into just the aspects of content creation that they deal with, because it fascinates me as a subject of, I've always wanted to like pick someone's brain on that, of like, hey, what's it like when you make content like video essays?
Yeah.
What does that look like on the back end when you upload that? So like, we upload a video with like a 30-second clip in, and you'll get like copyright struck out the ass. What does that look like when you've got like your 2-hour video is 2 hours of footage of something, a piece of media that someone else owns, but it is transformative. It is the definition of fair use, because it is commentary, criticism, critique, analysis.
Exactly.
It's so frustrating. It's good to hear someone's perspective on it.
That aspects of the discussion, and we talk a lot about the, you know, subject that a new video is on, which is Mad Men, and
yes,
we just try to do our best to kind of weave into talking to themselves as a content creator, and also delve into the subject of Mad Men, which is like the vague topic that we chose to talk about, but obviously used to just as a jumping off point for a more interesting conversation, hopefully.
Yes, and if anyone out there has any suggestions for other content creators or people out there online that they'd like to hear us talk to, or if you happen to be one of those content creators and you would like us to, you know, have you as a guest on an episode, like, reach out. There's plenty of links below you can do so, in addition to like Jose's links to all of their stuff. But one last thing we need to cover is the fact that we do like to offer all of our guests a their appearance fee. And Jose has asked if their appearance fee can be sent along to Medicine Sans Frontieres, aka Doctors Without Borders. So if you go check our Discord around the time this video has been uploaded, you'll see the receipts in there for the donation we made. Do we donate them in their name, like the guest name, or are you just donating like just the fee just as a whole to the...
For legal purposes, I've been donating them from the business and therefore using like my own name.
Okay,
because I don't know whether that gets messy or not. Like, I don't know.
In spirit, it's being donated on behalf of the guest. And like I said, they want Doctors Without Borders. We're all too happy to do that. So, yeah. And this is one of the things that our Patreon is helping support, because, we don't want to take anyone's time without at least offering them compensation.
And, if they want to take that compensation, of course, that is their time. Take that back. But also just be nice seeing, you know, people... refuse that and want to donate to good cause as well. So, yeah.
Gives you that nice warm, fuzzy feeling, right, of not only we're making something that hopefully people find interesting and entertaining, but also just, in a roundabout way, we're also supporting a worthy charity.
Yeah. And, thank you for all your support. Literally, like, that was our first Patreon goal, not only because, like, we wanted to collaborate with people, but also just, we wanted to be out there supporting other content creators, and clearly the people we've reached out to would like rather us just support charities, which is also really nice. But yeah, we just want to find people that we appreciate and try and help support them if we can.
Yes, I do hope it is Medicine Sans Frontieres, because I know like in Metal Gear Solid they call themselves like it's something Sans Frontieres, right, for like their Soldiers Without Borders.
I love that's how I the know idea the name. That like Carl sat there going, well, I've figured out the translation. It's a translation from Metal Gear Solid.
But instead of soldiers, just say doctors or medicine. So I'm pretty sure that's what it is. That, which I think sums up, like, the difference in interest, right? That's one of the things I like about Wiki Weekends and the idea of bringing on guests. Because like me and you, I'd like to say we have a lot of interest in common.
Yeah.
But if people watch like episodes like that are presented by us individually with the other person off camera as a guest, or that the audience surrogate for the voice off camera, you'll notice some trends and some patterns, and that's why it's nice to get a guest on sometimes to encourage us to think outside the box, or perhaps interact with something that we've maybe not thought about or would have covered on our own naturally.
Yeah, to get me watching the first bit of Mad Men and wanting to watch more, because I always had like a cursory interest, but this gives me like the kickstart to go, no, go watch Mad Men.
And what it'll never stop cracking me up, that one of the primary thrusts of Mad Men is literally a Simpsons bit. I won't say which bit, but, be warned that spoilers abound, because we're talking to someone who's just watched all of Mad Men 4 times in a row. So expect spoilers for the show, but I don't think hearing some of the spoilers will affect your enjoyment of the show, because just it's a really well-made show.
Yeah, exactly. And, we delve into many aspects, not just necessarily the plot, little behind the scenes stuff, but I guess that's just a good way to transition into the podcast and say, take it away,
us,
past Carl and Lucas.
And also, Jose. I always like Jose, Blue Jay. It's like, just like their branding is so much better than ours.
Most people's are.
Yeah. Because I think if we call this channel Carl, no one's fucking watching that shit, are they? If we call it Lucas, no one's watching that.
But somehow everyone's watching Jose.
Yeah. I want to know, like, what could we do with our names? Because we tried, like, Carl's Corner for a little bit.
But well, that worked. On my Pokemon streams, I combined my name to Lala.
Lala. That won't work.
Lala might work. We never know. Anyway, thank you for listening. Here's the podcast.
So thank you to our past selves. I'm the host of this one, Carl, joined, as mentioned, by Lucas Holland, and our special guest for today, Jose.
Carl, I think you do this, like, every time, where you're like, thanks to our past self, even though it'll be our future self introing into us.
How do I forget every time? We're recording the intro in the future, yes.
We do.
But we are joined, as mentioned, by a special guest, Jose, who's taken time out of their very, very busy schedule watching all manner of TV shows to join us on this episode, talking about something you'll be talking about in the future, yes?
I'm hoping so. You can never really tell these days, but yeah, I'm planning a video on a series called Mad Men.
And so how much Mad Men have you watched? I imagine you've watched the entire series front to back, but do you do multiple rewatches? Do you watch all of, like, the behind-the-scenes stuff, interviews, like books related to it, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so this is actually my second time watching the series. So I was watching it as it aired, 15 years ago now? Actually, longer than that. It came out in 2007. I should know that off the top of my head. Something like that.
Don't worry.
Okay. So yeah, this is my second time watching through the series, and, you know, first it's just a dry run through the series, and afterwards I'll go back and watch certain key moments or episodes again, usually taking extensive notes. Well, I take notes for every episode, but there are always ones I like to highlight a bit more. And then afterwards, there's a lot of watching of behind the scenes documentaries, looking up interviews, reading books about the production history. For this series in particular, there was a lot of additional material, so it was quite a bit to go through.
I imagine so, yes. Because that's the thing about your videos I'm always impressed by, is just the amount of content that you reference. There's always, like, so much stuff, and then you find behind-the-scenes stuff that I've never seen. Even though I love behind-the-scenes stuff, like making of documentaries and things like that, there's just, wait, where did you find this footage?
Yeah, a lot of it is a little tricky. Sometimes a show will have, like, a nice little DVD set with behind the scenes footage, and that's always a good base. But I like to go a little bit deeper, and you'll find, I don't know, for, like, older sitcoms, for instance, they'll usually have little promo videos they do for entertainment shows in the States, like Entertainment Tonight, where they'll have, like, they'll, like, visit the set for the day, and they'll have some, like, behind the scenes shots for stuff like that. And I don't know, there are people who just upload that stuff to YouTube all the time. So it's always a great help to source different pieces of material like that.
Yeah, the people who do that are heroes. Because I remember this in regards to Frasier, which we've done a video on in the past, as have yourself. And I remember finding just, oh, the cast of Frasier did a skit about Star Trek at the Emmys one year, and someone just uploaded it to YouTube in terrible quality, admittedly, but I didn't know the cast of Frasier did a Star Trek parody at the Emmys. That would have been lost forever, if not for the fact someone on YouTube just uploaded it for us.
I can almost understand, just because the ridiculous things I've seen uploaded, like, people will upload hours of just commercials from 1982, and I'm wondering, why did you save this? And why did you decide I need to put this onto YouTube? But, you know, here I am going, well, thank you for saving this, because one of these commercials features an appearance by a young actor who would later star in a TV show. And now I have this nice little bit of footage I can include in my video.
Well, I imagine that's the difficult part with video essays. It's just the sheer amount of B-roll.
Oh, yeah.
And you briefly talked about, like, copyrighted. It's like, obviously, before we get into Mad Men, I just want to know, how involved is the process of, like, trying to convince YouTube this is literally commentary? It's the most fair use of fair use justifications, but I'm assuming the robot just sees an hour straight of copyrighted footage that someone owns.
Well, the thing about YouTube is that it has no idea what it's doing when it's flagging stuff. I've had all manner of things flagged in just the most bizarre chunks. Sometimes it'll say, like, this 20 seconds was taken from this particular episode of a show when it comes from three different episodes or whatever. So it all is really contingent on the rights holder, actually, because YouTube will just flag this stuff and then pass it on to whoever holds the rights to a show. And it varies considerably from whoever happens to own the rights to a particular show. Some companies are very easy to deal with. Like NBC Universal, for instance, is very reasonable. They let me upload a clip that was nearly 2 minutes long, actually, for The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I am amazed they let me do that. But sometimes they'll sort of look the other way. And then there will be other rights holders that are incredibly protective. Sony, for instance, I had to fight them for weeks for the Married with Children video. I still have like horrible flashbacks about that, how they would just refuse every, just almost at random, the footage I could use and couldn't use. I think I had to cut out a good 15 or 20 minutes out of that video because they were just so protective of the footage. So it's really sort of a negotiation, and it's all done through YouTube. So you're not actually talking to a person. You just have to hope that when they see what's put in front of them, they can tell that this is commentary. I'm not just uploading episodes. And for the most part, it's not the worst process. It's just tedious.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here, but mm-hmm. our use of content, copyright or otherwise, is it tends to be a little less involved than a video essay, because like you literally need to use, in some cases, hours of footage, whereas we might use like a 10, 30-second clip here and there.
And yeah.
I imagine for your process as well, it needs to be, you can't use the usual tricks you'd use on YouTube, like reverse the footage or like pitch the audio up and down, because you need to have the footage as it was presented for the purposes of your content, I imagine.
Yeah, if I start messing around with things like that, it's going to affect, you know, when I'm presenting a clip, I can't switch it around or make any modifications, or it's just not going to be what I'm talking about anymore. And a lot of shows, especially for sitcoms, the comedy all comes in the timing. So as soon as you start messing with things like that, it just doesn't work right anymore. You can kind of get away with stuff. I've sometimes had to splice things around, particularly if there's very long speeches people make. That's proving a real challenge in Mad Men, which is very dramatic and people will speak at length about something. But we'll see how that one goes. Generally, though, if you can keep the clips shorter, that helps. So that's something I try to keep in mind when I'm putting together a script as well.
I've just always wondered that, because when I watch one of your videos, and I just, all I think is like, I'm using my YouTuber brain of, well, that's going to get copyright struck.
Yeah.
Like, just that's not getting in. And I do feel for just the amount of effort you must have to put in, and then to have, because we deal with, don't we, Lucas, of we use 10 seconds of a video, we want to claim all the money on your half an hour long video. I can't imagine how demoralizing that would be for like an hour long, 2 hour long video. That requires so much effort to collate and create, and is this combination of all these different sources and weeks, months of research from yourself. And then it's like, we use 10 seconds of something that we made in the 90s, so we want that.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. Weirdly enough, the worst is when YouTube decides to get involved, which is very rare. But when it happens, I find that's the most frustrating. I actually had two different videos that were at various points. One was age restricted, and another one was just demonetized for footage I used. I still remember one was in the Scrubs video. There was a clip where I couldn't use it in the video, but one of the characters, JD, who has like these fantasy little things that happen to him, was constantly getting second-guessed by one of the senior doctors there. And the joke at the very end is he has this little daydream where his head just explodes because he's so frustrated. And the doctor's like, well, you're never going to get ahead as a doctor if your head explodes like that. And I thought that was a fun little clip. But YouTube saw that and they're like, you can't put a beheading in your video. And just getting that information from them took days, which was annoying. But I'm just like, this is it. Like, it's just a joke. Like, the guy's, his head pops like a grape. This isn't a beheading video. But then I had to go like remove that footage or replace it with something else. And the other one was a more recent one with the Superstore video, where there was like a sex scene and there was like maybe a 1.5 second shot where you can see someone climbing on top of somebody else. And they were just like, that's too far. You've violated community guidelines, even though this was on network television in the US. Yeah. But apparently that's too much. And I had to cut that chunk out.
When you just said Superstore, I was thinking to myself, I was like, this is a pretty tame show. I can't imagine like what would be against community guidelines on Superstore of all things. But it's interesting that just like kind of the general implication of sex happening, YouTube's like, nope.
Yeah, and it was just that shot too, because like the rest of the scene was fine. It's just when you see, because it was like blurred out because it was like from security cam footage. They wanted to do sort of like a documentary thing for that particular moment. And I guess they were like, that's a little too spicy for us. So
it's wild considering what else they get away with on YouTube. But the format of the Wiki Weekends videos, Wiki Weekdays, isn't it, Lucas?
It is the Wiki Weekdays podcast, but just sorry, Wiki Weekends as a general concept, yes.
Is that we go through a wiki. So we have in front of us now, or at least I have in front of me now, is the Mad Men Wiki. And I'm just going to go through like the basic information right at the start. And no doubt you will have way more information than this if you are watching this after the fact by going and clicking on Jose's video or found below. But to get us all on the same page, click this Wikipedia page. Mad Men is an American period drama television series created by Matthew Weiner. And I just saw that name and I'm so glad there's someone out there. Like,
actually.
Is it Weiner? Ah.
Yes. Well, which is slightly better, but still kind of insulting.
It's like I'm like Carl Smallwood, so I was going to make a whole joke about that, but I guess a man after my own heart here, but Weiner also doesn't work that well.
Yeah. Oh, Carl's just been sandbagged by himself there.
I feel like I had to say it quickly. Every interview that guy does, he feels like he needs to correct people because people say Weiner all the time.
I completely feel for him. That's what I was going to joke about. Like, I'm a small ward and I get it. I get it. Of wanting to like, okay, my last name's funny. It's not that funny.
There's something about names that have an obvious joke. People love to tell them.
So I was going to try and get ahead of it first, but I guess his name's Matthew Weiner. So I've learned something already. We're less than a sentence in and we're already learning.
We are indeed. And I was going to say, like, yeah, the one that I always get, my name isn't complicated or anything, but the amount of times I've heard the joke, oh, you've spilt some paint on your head when I've got dyed hair, it's like, okay, yeah. Yeah, like, I've heard it 300 times and I'm just like, okay, yeah. Like, every man over the age of 50 loves to tell me that I've spilt paint on my head.
Yeah, I feel like that's something that's very, I guess, British, because I've never heard that over here, not once. Not that I dye my hair, but I mean, I have friends who dye their hair, and they never hear that, so.
It is a very tired joke.
For me, I always get No Way Jose, which is endless.
Of course.
And I've heard pretty much every version of it at this point, but people still feel like maybe this time.
You always see the glint in their eye as well about when they hear it and they go, I bet I know what he's not heard.
Yeah.
You know, we move on now, though. So it ran on network, cable network AMC from July 19th, 2007 to May 17th, 2015 with 7 seasons and 92 episodes. And I was telling Lucas about this before the recording started of, maybe you can confirm it for us, Jose, of, like, is there any truth to the rumour that the final season was split into two because the director, writer wanted to not compete with Breaking Bad at the Emmys?
You know, I hadn't really come across that specific claim. Well, it was sort of a trend at AMC to actually split the final seasons of several shows twice. So they did that with Breaking Bad, but they also did it with Mad Men. They did it with Hell on Wheels. I believe there was another show they did that with as well. I suspect it was just a directive from AMC towards their prestige dramas in general, though, because the way hearing Matthew Weiner talk about Breaking Bad, and also I ended up listening to a few interviews from Bryan Cranston and other folks about Mad Men, from Breaking Bad talking about Mad Men, they seem to have a lot of affection and respect for one another. So I think they're kind of okay with each other, actually.
Yeah, so I was telling you, wasn't I, Lucas, like John Hamm at the Emmys when he finally got it crawled onto the stage to collect it? Because every time he went up against Bryan Cranston, Bryan Cranston just crushed it.
It was certainly a moment in time where just all of a sudden we had this like prestige television, and it was almost like this like golden age of just, we've still got network television creating these prestige shows, and we haven't quite gotten into the realm of like Netflix and streaming services really taking over yet.
Well, oddly enough, yeah, that is mentioned here. It is widely regarded as one of the greatest television series of all time, and is part of the early 21st century golden age of television. So that includes things like Sally the Sopranos, The Wire, mm-hmm. Breaking Bad, Mad Men. And these just prestige television shows that just, you can feel the money burning on screen.
Whereas now Netflix likes to spend like, I think it was like $320 million to make The Electric State, and people have already stopped talking about it within like a week.
It's so different now, too. That's definitely something that comes up in my video towards the end, how this was very much on the cusp, sort of the last gasp of a certain era of television, where we were all sort of connected to this cultural moment, and everyone seemed to be watching the same show. Like, even if you weren't watching Mad Men, because its ratings weren't spectacular, you were still aware of it. It was in sort of the cultural zeitgeist, and that doesn't happen in quite the same way. And one of the interesting things about Mad Men is its history is actually connected to a lot of these shows. Matthew Weiner, before he created Mad Men, worked on The Sopranos. And he actually got that job because the script he wrote for Mad Men, he couldn't get it made back in 2001. But the creator of The Sopranos, David Chase, saw that script and was like, this guy's really good and I want him on my show. So he ended up working on The Sopranos, built his reputation, and just barely got AMC to create Mad Men later on.
Which is kind of wild given, because I'm aware of like how much it costs to make Mad Men. Because if you look at the show, just on a surface level, it doesn't look that expensive. It's people in nice suits in offices. But when you think about how much invisible CGI, I think the term is, they had to use to make it look like it was set in the period it was. Just every window shot had to have someone go over it to make sure, well, you can't see like a plane go past, for example, or every shot on a street. We have to have period accurate cars, period accurate clothes.
And period accurate buildings, right? As well?
I believe so, yes. I believe they had to do like some CGI work on the skyline to make it look like it did back in the 1960s and then early 70s.
Well, yeah, and the thing about the show is they actually, for the pilot, they shot in a building that was built back in the 1950s. So it was, you know, accurate to that era, but it was in New York, and it was so expensive that they actually moved it to Los Angeles just to keep costs down, because they recreated the whole thing on a soundstage, and then they had to they could get all the props, all the sort of vehicles, everything from that era readily available in Los Angeles warehouses, whereas if they had to ship it out to New York, that would have just made it even more expensive. So it's a very rich looking show, though.
Yes. Like money burning on screen. Like it's to the point where it nearly, not bankrupts of a network, but there's a lot of behind the scenes rumors about whether or not it impacted the production of all the shows, because Mad Men kind of became like the network baby. I know, for example, it's like with Walking Dead, there's a lot of like rumors that it ate some of the budget for The Walking Dead, even though The Walking Dead was like a good money earner for them because it wasn't seen as prestigious.
Yeah, the thing about Mad Men is it had a really special spot in the network where it wasn't just there to make money. It did like turn a profit. Well, I don't know if it was profitable. I know it made some money for AMC and they had like a big increase in their buy rates, but it was more about establishing a reputation for the network by saying like, this is the kind of show we have on our TV. It's actually responsible for quelling Bryan Cranston's fear when he was going to be on Breaking Bad and he found out it was on AMC and he's like, I don't know about this. I don't know about this channel. He was a little worried. And then they sent him a DVD of Mad Men and said like, this is the kind of show we're going to be putting on here. And then he was like, oh, you guys actually make good stuff. And he was then sort of like, okay with doing this random show on AMC that ended up being a huge hit for them as well. So I think that's how they saw it, as an investment in the brand of the channel more so than just like going to go out there and make a ton of money the way a show like, I'm sure Walking Dead made them so much money.
We talked about Walking Dead previously, where it was a good money earner for them. But the problem with Walking Dead is that it's not really a prestigious show because it's a zombie show. And it's, I forget who it was now, the director of it. It's the guy who did like The Shawshank Redemption.
Frank Darabont.
Frank Darabont, yes, where he got fired like 2 days after promoting season 2 at Comic-Con because he asked for more money. And they made him do twice as many episodes for half as much money. And the long-standing rumour has been that they took some of the money to give it to Mad Men because they saw it as being more prestigious for their brand. And they gave him very helpful suggestions for how to make the little amount of money they gave him stretch further, such as, why don't you just suggest zombies instead of showing them in a show about zombies, which I found hilarious. And those classic network notes that you hear about, those like legendary like bad takes from execs of like, why don't you just suggest the idea of zombies instead of showing them?
I also don't think it's not a surprise that most of the show took place in the outdoors in locations that I'm sure were dirt cheap to, finance.
A single farm. And they fired him after season two. The guy who directed The Shawshank Redemption before they moved it to a prison.
Yeah, because that's season three, right? Is literally like the prison season.
In regards to my, I love as well the idea that he had to, it was cheaper to film it not on location, which is such a wild thing.
I guess it does make sense though, Jose, you're talking about like shipping period accurate vehicles and stuff that they must just have stashed away in LA in like warehouses and on sound stages and stuff. Like, it's easy for them to just roll them down the street rather than having to get them like shipped all the way over to New York
and block off an entire real New York street.
Yeah, I mean, the reason they were even in New York to begin with was because they were actually Matthew Warner was in production while they were making the last season of The Sopranos, which they split in half on HBO. I think that might have something to do with where AMC got that idea, actually, now that I think of it. In between like the first and second season, or the first and second half of the last season of The Sopranos, Matthew Warner actually got like the crew from The Sopranos to go help him with the pilot for Mad Men. And since they're all based in New Jersey, they're like, well, we got a New York location. In New York, so we can just head up down the street with these people who are already here and get this pilot done.
You're talking about HBO there, and like that's what I was thinking of in terms of like being British. We don't overly know your TV networks, but the one network that obviously wanted to create like prestigious TV is HBO, and I guess that's where AMC was like trying to try and land with shows like Mad Men.
Oh, absolutely. That's a major influence in why they went with that show. They wanted to be like HBO, because before then they were just plain old movies. They would just, you know, before Mad Men was on their show, they had like one other original that had any sort of impact, which was a Western. It was a limited series. I can't remember its name right now. And before then they had like a few smaller scripted things that didn't make any sort of impact. But otherwise the rest of their schedule was just like movies from the 1970s or something, like just old classics like The Godfather and what have you. And that's all great, but if you want to attract an audience of more than a few hundred thousand people, if you're lucky, you need to start producing things that come from a date more recent
to watch.
Something a little more recent
as well.
Yeah,
one of the things that surprised me so much is like the show itself is about advertising. So I guess we can go to the premise here just to get us all on the same page once again. So the premise is simply it covers the advertising industry centered around Madison Avenue in New York City in the 1960s, primarily following the professional and personal life of protagonist Don Draper, a creative director and partner at a Manhattan firm. And to prepare myself for this recording session, I did rewatch the... I think I got a couple of seasons in when it was first airing, but it was hard to watch over here if you didn't have it wasn't on streaming services when it was airing here. It was only on like your equivalent to cable, but I was in university, so I didn't have that. So I think I got like three seasons in. So I rewatched the pilot a couple of times, made some notes, and also rewatched like a supercut of like Don Draper's pictures. And that's what fascinated me so much. I was originally studying to go into marketing when I was at university before I fell ass backwards into YouTube. And him dealing with like executives who just don't know.
I think as well, like the opening does such a good job of just establishing the tone of the people you're going to meet, where it's like, oh, this is about like Mad Men, a term that was used for like these advertising men in Madison Avenue back in the day. And it's like, this was coined by themselves. And it's like, okay, yeah, a great just tone setter.
Yeah, it's absolutely perfect. And that speaks to the heart of what that the show is. It's these people who have created a vision of America that is ubiquitous when we think of this particular era of, like, you know, the nuclear family and the professional man and all this stuff. This is just something they manufactured. Like, it reflects a moment in time, but it's one that is not quite so organic as people imagine it to be.
Well, it's like kind of almost cliffhanger ending to the pilot, right? It's that you see him working this life where he's, like, you know, going around sleeping with this woman, like, meeting all these executives, going for drinks with clients, things like this. And then at the very end, it turns out that he's got, like, this facade of the nuclear family back at home where he's got a wife and kids that he just seemingly, you know, abandons and cheats on all the time.
Yeah, and for context, Lucas, you are wholly unfamiliar with Mad Men, yes? So we have, like, a spectrum of familiarity with the show here. We have Jose, who has his possibly encyclopedic knowledge from, like, the couple of months you spent living in the world. Lucas, who watched one episode and is familiar with it via osmosis. And myself, who's more familiar with the production side and got a couple of seasons in.
Yeah, I watched the pilot and then kind of went and dove into a few, like, articles and videos and stuff trying to, like, surmise some of the themes and some of the different, like, plot lines going on and things like that. And it does seem like this kind of dual life of Don Draper seems to be throughout the show, not just the pilot itself.
Yeah, that's absolutely at the heart of the series, this question of who Don Draper is and, like, what is his essence? What is the core of his being? And he's someone he's very tragic. He's obviously a bad guy, as you can see in that first episode, cheating on, first it seems like he's just cheating on his girlfriend, but oh no, he's also cheating on his wife. And he's just like that kind of guy who is obsessed with presenting this image of himself, of creating this life for himself. I don't know how much you want me to spoil about what happens on the show. I don't know if you're going to be watching any more of it.
Full spoilers. Like, I will watch it, but we can talk full spoilers here.
So by, like, the third episode, you find out he's also gone by a different name, Dick Whitman. And you found out he had this whole life before he assumed the identity of Don Draper, who was a real guy. They served in Korea together, and then he died, and Dick stole his identity in order to get back home and away from the war.
Like a principal Skinner on that one.
That's what got me. Because when I was, like, reminding myself of that detail, I went, wait, isn't this this principal and the pauper, which is the most widely considered to be the moment where the Simpsons just died because it's such a ridiculous concept, but Mad Men somehow sold it.
Yeah, I mean, it was at the heart of the premise of the show, though. It's funny because that was not the idea in the original pilot. Matthew Weiner had actually written a screenplay at some point in the 90s about a guy who had a fake identity. And when he was pitching the show and, you know, AMC expressed interest in the pilot, he was like, oh, I need to flesh this out a bit more because I can't just be a guy who cheats on his wife and that's the show. So he came up with the idea of a dual identity later on. And there's, like, a vague reference to it. They inserted it into the pilot. It's one of the few changes they made to that script. When it went into production, where you can see Don Draper pick up the Purple Heart that he won in the war, that was just sort of foreshadowing, like, that's not his medal. That was the original Don Draper. It was supposed to be going to him. Obviously, though, he was dead, so he couldn't take it. So that's how the show ended up becoming even more about these false fronts he puts up and how he's just this... I use the term hollow man. I'm not sure that's exactly accurate now, but it's in the video, so let's pretend that's exactly what it is. it's sort of the complex, the challenge of dealing with a show like this. There's a lot of layers going on.
Yeah, there is. Because, like, Don Draper presents himself as, like, you know, this well-paid man who, like, is mostly confident, but reaching the stumbling block with... the problem of, like, marketing the cigarettes and stuff, but then he just gets immediately called out by the woman that he meets as a client, and just when he's talking about his life essentially having no meaning, and you're born alone and you die alone, and she's like, oh, you're a very different person than what you present yourself.
Yeah, very fitting for a show about advertising and like with all of his speeches about, well, advertising is really just creative lying. Like, we're not selling people a product, we're selling people an idea. And like, he's obviously, there's a lot of parallels. He's speaking about himself in all of those scenes. And something that's interesting is the series goes on, at least as I read it, his speeches get more and more aggressive as he's trying so aggressively to present himself as the image of the ideal man that he thinks that he is.
Yeah, it's what makes him kind of sad to watch, actually. You can see him sort of selling parts of his life in each of these speeches. And as the series goes on, he seems to be losing more and more of that as he just keeps digging deeper and deeper. It's like he's not really there, but also he is there in sort of there's a strange duality of him like that. And one of the things I've always really appreciated about the character is, and this is a very subtle thing, is that the whole idea of like that he presents in his advertisements, it's not like Don Draper is the one guy who invented all of this. It's, you know, it's a product of an industry. And the fact that he thinks this is what's a proper life is and this is what's going to make him happy shows how the advertising has also worked on him. Like, the person doing the advertise has also sort of fallen for the same lie he tells other people about how to build a happy life. And the great irony is, like, he is not happy. He is a deeply sad man.
Yeah, he's been sold on, like, the American dream, so to speak.
And that is a question I've got for you, Lucas. Have you watched, like, you know, it's one episode.
Mm-hmm.
One episode. So do you think Don Draper's a cool guy? That's the most interesting thing for me, because while I was, like, rewatching the first episode, then I went to watch some clips, you inevitably scroll down to YouTube, and I'd say a good 50% of the comments on clips are like, wow, Don Draper's so cool.
Yeah, it's the exact misunderstanding, like, just that
Brian
people
Cranston
have
as Walter White, right?
Well, I mean, there's that. I was gonna say Patrick Bateman in American Psycho, of like, look at this suave guy who just has this shit together. It's like, what movie were you watching? It's like, I've watched that first pilot and a few other clips, and every scene involving a woman just makes my skin crawl because of just like the inherent misogyny. And obviously, he's trying to portray, like, the 50s, and even, like the first scene where he's drinking at the bar, and immediately it's, like, being asked, like, oh, is this man disturbing you? And it's, like, clearly, like, hinting at, like, segregation to some extent still.
Yeah. It just, Don Draper comes across as pathetic in almost every scene that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's clearly not happy, even in, like, the first episode. And I don't understand how people can watch it even superficially and think that Don Draper's a cool guy. Same with, like, Breaking Bad as well, of Bryan Cranston being a badass, where he's an asshole from the second one. Mm-hmm. Almost the first episode, you see, like, the mask slip and the monster that's underneath.
Yeah.
And how much of that have you encountered in your research, Jose? I imagine your research has been more academic than reading comments on YouTube, but you must have interacted with it somewhat.
Yeah, there is a small section. I'm still debating whether or not I want to keep it in the video. I probably will, especially since I'm talking about it on a podcast. But there's one part where I don't know if you know this, like, old meme that was going around a lot of Don Draper when he's in the elevator and this guy, yeah, you know what I mean. So the guy was like, confronts him and says, calls him like petty and small. He's like, I think you're all this stuff to Don Draper. And he just, like, Don doesn't even look at him. And he's like, I don't think about you at all. And just walks away. Yeah. And it's like,
that's
he's putting
the clip
this,
I found. And it was like, oh, what a badass Don Draper is. And then you watch like 30 seconds after that and you see Don Draper's entire worldview crumble as he realizes he was right. He got me.
I mean, the whole episode is kind of built around that. Don is like terrified of this young guy coming up and just showing him up. Like earlier in the episode, he basically sabotages his chances at a presentation by leaving this guy's really good pitch in the cab and just going with the one he came up with. And like, Don clearly thinks about this guy all the time. He is terrified and obsessed with him. But, you know, people don't really see that. They just sort of see this, the sort of false front of Don Draper. And it shows how effective advertising really is. If
you fell for it, yeah.
Yeah, even the criticism of advertising still works as advertising. You know, it's that old adage of there's no such thing as bad press.
Yeah, so you fell for the propaganda twice. Like, you fall for the front that Don Draper's putting on, even though the episode itself spells out for you that he's lying. Like, he's incredibly insecure.
It's one thing that I find very funny is that just, you know, regarding kind of more a closer example of our world, so to speak, in YouTube, is like, even if you're, for example, like mocking the idea of doing like the like, subscribe, follow, click that bell, all that jazz, like, remember to go and subscribe to Jose as well. But just, even if you do it in like a mocking way and a parody of it, it's still more likely to at least remind people to do it.
Yeah, so it always works. It's the sort of thing we have to kind of remind ourselves. There's this really great part in Mad Men, actually, where he's dating a psychologist at one point, and she's just starts presenting these very obvious psychological principles, and he thinks it's all a bunch of nonsense. And it's like, what are you talking about, dude? This is like a science. When someone says past behavior predicts future behavior, that's just true. Like, that's the best indicator of what you're going to do in the future. And to pretend otherwise is just this delusion we've sort of wrapped ourselves in. And the idea that advertising doesn't work, it's like, you know, it's a $1 billion industry. It didn't make up all that money on nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one thing to spend $1 billion if it didn't work.
Exactly.
It's like one thing that left me intrigued as hopefully something that they would follow up on in the future past the pilot was the moment where Don Draper, after the pitch to the tobacco company, is like, hey, you know, I left that psychologist notes in my trash for a reason. Like, that's not going to work. And just because you can steal out of my trash can doesn't make it a good idea. And the guy just confidently is like, I still think she was right. And I really hope that that's like followed up on at some point. But yeah.
Cool. That was the thing that fascinated me, because I'm not sure how much of an influence the work of this guy was. So this is the person I learned about in university when I was like going to do marketing. One Edward Bernays. Has he come up at all in your research, Jose?
It sounds vaguely familiar. There were a couple of advertising folks whose names cropped up while I was researching this.
What reminded me of Edward Bernays is in the pilot, the lady mentions, like the lady... like psychologist mentions Sigmund Freud. Edward Bernays was Freud's nephew, and he is like famous or infamous, depending on how you want to look at what he did for his advertising campaigns, including with Lucky Strike cigarettes.
Right.
So the brand that Don Draper is advertising, which is why it reminded me of him. And he is the guy who convinced women to smoke by framing smoking as an act of feminist rebellion.
Ooh.
And he organized a bunch of publicity stunts where he got women to smoke in front of a news office and called the cigarettes tortures of freedom.
Because
he also managed to make...
Isn't women smoking something that happened during like the suffragettes movement?
It may have been linked to that.
I can't remember whether that's like definitely linked or not. I might be getting them a bit conflated there.
But yeah, Edward Bernays is one of the reasons why a lot of women start smoking. He also advertised Lucky Strike cigarettes and organised what's known as the Green Gala, because their packaging was seen as not attractive to women. And rather than change their packaging, he thought, well, why not just change the opinions of women in regards to what's fashionable? And just held a gala, invited a bunch of celebrities of the age, got them all to dress in green, took pictures of them all smoking cigarettes, and then Lucky Strike's sales figures with women went through the roof. It's like, it's so evil, but you kind of have to just appreciate his just the flat way he thought about it. Well, why not just change the way people think then? And the idea of like framing smoking as like feminist rebellion to getting millions of women addicted to smoking because he was paid to. He's also the guy who got people to eat egg and bacon for breakfast. He's responsible for that.
Well, the thing about smoking is that that was where some of the biggest innovations in advertising were happening at the time. A lot of that was because of pressure from the government and the fact that everyone was figuring out these things cause cancer. So they just started investing more and more money into cigarettes to market them in a way that would convince people, actually, they're fine.
Which is the terrifying part about Mad Men. Like, that first episode is so... I don't want to say dystopian, because it's the past. But just when you look at some of the, like, for example, like the lady, they're just having a conversation at the table, smoking, and like the kid, obviously the kid runs in with a plastic bag over their head, like, I'm a spaceman. It's like, oh my God, no. What are they doing? But then, like, the lady stands up and she's pregnant. And she's just smoking. Or like, when she goes to the doctor, there's a lady at the doctor's, and the doctor walks in and starts smoking. I'm like, is there a term for when you look back at the past and it's horrifying? What's the opposite of dystopia?
I don't know if we have enough. We don't have enough of these kinds of projects for there to be a name yet, unfortunately. But it's the opposite of nostalgia, I guess.
It was horrifying. Like, Lucas, what did you think when you saw that? Of like, just the glimpse into the past of like doctors smoking and pregnant ladies and children playing with plastic bags over their head.
The doctor lighting up was the one that really took me out of things and was like, holy fuck, I'd be so pissed off. Just, yeah, the idea that, like, obviously everyone is smoking at all times for the show, but all literally, like, the doctor lighting up is like, oh, okay. And obviously the drinking aspect is more towards, like, all of these, like, you know, men in New York that are businessmen, and it's like, that was part of that culture, not specifically just, like, everybody necessarily, but, yeah, just the smoking aspect is just, it's weird to look back on, like, oh no, this was just fine. And it is very funny when it comes to, like, the kind of revelation that Don Draper has in that first episode of, well, we don't really need to market ourselves with anything. We can just kind of say, oh, like, it's roasted. It's like, okay, but everyone's cigarettes is roasted. It's like, doesn't matter. Nothing matters. It's just how we frame it.
Yeah, it's all about selling people a feeling. And when you're selling people this feeling of happiness and security, it doesn't matter that the actual thing will kill you. People just want to chase that feeling.
Yeah.
Kind of like Don Draper with the American Dream.
It's terrifying to look at. And like I said, just a couple more examples of Edward Bernays in regards to, like, he also was in charge of trying to sell more hairnets. And this is one of the things that he did that's somewhat positive, I suppose. It is positive. It's a net positive of to sell more hairnets. He engaged in a campaign to make hairnets a requirement for people working in the food industry. But he did it to make, he made it like a federal regulation for that to be a thing, to sell more hairnets.
But people would never use federal laws to gain their own benefit. And no, that can't happen, Carl.
Yeah. And just, that's the kind of thing that he'd do. He also was the person they tasked with, like, convincing Americans that water fluoridization was safe. That was, like, one of the things that he, like, spearheaded. And he didn't do it out of any, like, obligation for serving the public trust. He did it because they paid him.
I think that might be one of my favourite episodes of Parks and Recreation, funnily enough, is where they're talking about, like, marketing the different waters.
Oh, and yeah. H2 flow.
H2 flow and shit. It's just, like, that's such a funny episode of just, again, it's just spinning the same water that they already had, but putting branding on top of it and selling them a new idea.
Yeah, it's really depressing sometimes when you, especially when you see it coming, and it seems like you're sort of asking yourself, like, am I the crazy one? Am I, like, the only one who can see this, that it's just, it's H2 flow? Like, this is just water? But, you know, people, they sell water in, like, fancy containers all the time. So,
yeah,
it's depressingly really, resonates.
Kind of throws me off is kind of the amount that we sell bottled water, at least in the UK, when the tap water is drinking safe generally. Apart from, like, occasional mishaps and such, but
it surprises
me just how much money is in selling bottled water when you can just get it for free from a tap.
Yeah, that's... I wrote an article about it a few years ago where Dasani tried to do that in the UK. And Dasani is quite popular in the US. When they tried to launch in the UK, they had a number of issues because they tried to take a shot at the drinking water. And they said, oh, our water is more filtered than drinking water. And the water board in the UK got really annoyed about it because, hey, this is like, we pride ourselves on our water being very safe. So on principle, they tested Dasani and found out that not only is Dasani water somehow not cleaner and more filtered than the water you get from a tap, it somehow had more carcinogens in it because of their bottling process. So it was actually less safe than drinking water. they also tried to advertise it's coming from a natural source, but it turns out they were just bottling it directly from the tap, essentially. Like, use the water, like, planting like Sidcup somewhere, not from like a river or anything like that. And then they also advertised it by saying it's full of spunk, not realizing that in the UK that is slang for semen. And they had giant posters with ladies splashing the water on their face with that marketing on it. And just Dasani died a death in the UK. But I just think to myself of like, they tried so hard to convince people that it was better than just the water you got from a tap, even though it was literally the water from a tap that they were bottling and trying to sell.
I remember that trying to market here in Canada as well, actually. I don't know if they're still around. I don't think it really worked out for them here either. It yeah, sounds like the
design is not great.
I think they just have a really bad marketing team and also a terrible product.
Yeah, the tweet of just like Dasani tastes like you're drinking out of a water gun. It's just, yeah, as soon as I heard that, I couldn't not drink it. It's terrible. Yeah, the idea of like they literally just bottled water and then tried to sell it to the public. They tried to bottle a public resource and sell it to the public for money. And they almost got away with it, but just had a horrible marketing team. If Don Draper would have been in charge, maybe they'd gotten away with it.
Yeah, I was about to say, they just sounds like they needed a Don Draper in there.
In that vein, do you have like a favourite pitch of Don Draper's, Jose? Because I liked his one that he did for Heinz. The Heinz one I found to be ingenious, to the point where I think Heinz themselves actually stole it from the episode.
Oh, there was a couple of instances where various brands tried to capitalise on their appearance on Mad Men to try and generate some success. They actually had very few integrations on the show itself, which surprised me. I can't think of many pitches that he had that I really loved. Because every time he would say them, I would just immediately think of his life, and I'm like, oh my god, you're pitching a slideshow on some like Kodak slide projector.
That one's great.
Yeah, it's really good, but you're like, oh, it's just because you're sad about, you know, your brother dying, and this is, and you can't even like talk to people about it, and this is depressing. And now I'm too bummed out.
So a lot of it is just a reflection on how the character is doing at the time.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's
actually my favorite is probably the one where he accidentally stole a line. It was for Life Cereal, that's what it was. And he just showed up and he was floundering. He was kind of drunk and just doing a really bad job.
I don't think he's kind of drunk in that scene. He's all the way drunk in that scene. It's great.
Fair enough. And he's just like firing off these lines. And one of them was just like the cure for the common breakfast, not realizing he stole that from somebody else. And the people are just like, we love it. It's great. And I'm like, not only is that not great, the fact that they couldn't see this man was falling out of his chair drunk is, I guess it's just things are sometimes so easy. If you have a really ridiculous client.
I didn't even notice, like, that's great. That's the line for Frosties, isn't it? That's Tony the Tiger's line. Get him in.
Yeah, that's true. They could have put that in there too.
Oh, I think the Heinz one gets me because, as I said, I initially studied marketing, and it's the specific interaction he has with people from Heinz. So Lucas, if you're not familiar with it, it's like the advertising, it's a French fry. And it's just on its own. And it's like, what's missing? Puts down like a piece of like the overlay. What it needs is Heinz. Genius. So genius, in fact, Heinz actually used it for a series of adverts.
Hmm.
And like the marketing people from Heinz are like, but we need to see the ketchup. And you see Don Draper, well, no, because you don't want people to see the ketchup because they imagine the ketchup's there. And now Heinz is now synonymous with ketchup. He even says like, well, what else would it be? Of course it's Heinz. And it's like, but then the marketer's like, but can you put ketchup on the thing? Like, but the whole advert hinges on the fact that you imagine the ketchup being there because you, when we say Heinz, you know what we mean.
Yeah, it's like something is missing and that's the point.
Is that when you say Heinz, they think ketchup. That's what you want, right? Or another one with Hilton. It's like, how do you say hamburger in Japanese? Hilton. So the fact that the Hilton Hotel is found everywhere and sells everything, the guy's like, that's not, I think, you didn't give me the moon. It's like, but you don't have a location on the moon. So you don't have a location on the moon, Mr. Hilton. I just, yeah, all the scenes of him interacting with executives who just like, it reminds me when I had to do copywriting back in the day. And it's like, you do something like creative and interesting and all you get back is, but you didn't mention the product. So I did. I just didn't put product name, trademark in it 15 times to link stuff for SEO purposes.
Ooh.
So yeah, just name the products. So,
I remember a friend of mine telling me this story about how he had to write, he had to edit these slogans that were printed on pieces of stationery. And these were being sold in Japan. And they wanted him to look it over. He was living there at the time. Because they wanted someone who was a native speaker to make sure it was all grammatically correct and it made sense. And when it came to him, it just was not good English. It was very just mangled and indecipherable. So he changed it so it was legible and written in English. And he thought, you know, snappy enough. And when he gave it back to them, they were just like, no, we don't really like this. In fact, we're just going to go back to the way we had it before that was indecipherable and made no sense because they just felt like this is the right way to do it. Even though, like, a native English speaker is telling them this isn't proper English.
That was 90% of my job doing SEO and copywriting work of, you paid me to write this, and then you told me that you didn't like it. Why didn't you just submit what you wanted? Like, why would you pay me to do this if you're not going to take my suggestions, advice, or work? If you're just going to tell me to make it what you wanted? It's like, just get a copy. Like, you don't need a copywriter for that. Just write it yourself and get it spell checked.
I think the few parts where I really was championing Don Draper's when he started snapping back at these clients. And it was like, I don't know how realistic that was or how someone would be able to get away with that in that sort of setting. But it was just like, oh, thank you, Don, for like clapping back at this guy who's just spouting the worst ideas for creative I've ever heard.
That's always the way. It's like, which is very relevant to this day of, like, especially with like the rise of AI and stuff of these executives thinking, well, do you know what people want? It's like, no, you don't know what people want. You don't think like a person. You don't think like a human being. Or when I had to do, like I said, copywriting, and they'd want me to mention a brand, okay, but you can't mention it in the way that a person would. You have to write the full brand name. So instead of like the example, I didn't write for this, but this is an example I'm aware of, like when it comes to Photoshop, people just call it Photoshop. People know what you mean when you say Photoshop. But Adobe and all their press releases would not let you write Photoshop. You had to write Adobe Photoshop. But that's not how people talk. And no matter how many times you try and tell them, it doesn't read like a human being wrote this. They couldn't be told that, no, it has to be Adobe Photoshop. We have to protect our brand. It's just, okay, no one's going to read it because it reads awkwardly.
Yeah, with those press releases, I always get the impression companies are just hoping some journalist will see something in there and then try to make a story out of it. But they do absolutely no favors to anybody by making them so mechanical, so dry, so tedious to read. That's, I can't imagine the vast majority of them are even considered for anything. It's just sort of noting, here's a new product that's being announced, and everyone sees the emails in their inbox, and every journalist just deletes it because they don't want to see Adobe Photoshop 6.1 introduces new feature of updating layer settings. Then it's like, I'm glazing over already.
It was exactly that, yeah. So I'd have to, my job was doing copywriting was things like, here's a press release from the company, reword it for our website. And if you try to reword it creatively, you just get a note back saying, you've changed too much of the original press release. It's like, in that case, just copy paste the press release and put it on your website. So we can't do that, because if we do that, then for SEO purposes, Google ranks it poorly because it's not original. So what? And it's that Simpsons moment of put all the groceries in the bag, but I don't want it to be heavy. So I want you to create a new original rewording of this, but also it has to keep all these same original words.
Has to keep the original phrasing, etc.
Yeah. And that's why I just don't do that job anymore. Because it was soul-killing. And like Don Draper, I feel for him when he sees him, like, what does he do at 9 o'clock in the morning when he gets into his office and he hears someone, you ready to go to a meeting? Just immediately pours that whiskey. Get it a little bit, don't you?
I presume, because I was just watching some scenes completely out of context throughout the different seasons, and I presume this must be right towards the end, but I just watched one clip where it was like Don Draper comes into a room and it's like half of the different like creative directors in the company are there, and they're talking about like the beer belt of America and like trying to sell light beer to American men, and he just walks out. And he's just done, and I presume that's his moment of just, like, towards the end of the show, just quitting and realizing that he hates his life.
Well, that does happen towards the end. There is quite a bit more after, but that is, like, a very key moment where he just, like, he just stares out a window, he sees a plane in the background, and he's just like, I gotta go. And he just kind of gets up, leaves, and it's a very important odyssey he's about to go on in that moment.
I just respect it, though, right? It's just that moment where he realizes, I hate my job and my life. Like, what am I doing?
Just walk out.
I had the same thing when I was copywriting, and I just, like, sat down for my day and looked at my emails, and it's like, okay, rewrite these 20 different things. And I just looked and went, no. And just quit. It's like, I don't want to do this anymore. This is killing me. I'd rather, like, I quit my job cleaning toilets to do this. I'd rather be cleaning toilets, at least I can talk to a human when I do that.
Yeah, my previous job, I had a similar moment where I was just, I forget what the project even was, but I was writing something and it was kind of long, and I just saw all these notes that it didn't really add anything to what I was doing. It was just sort of just making it a lot more tedious to work on this. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. This is like, you either want me to write this or you want me to write as you writing this. So then I left, and it was just such a great moment when you can walk away like that. I mean, it's great for a moment until you realize, like, oh my God, how am I going to make a living? But
yeah,
in that moment when you can, like, just say no and leave, it feels great. And unfortunately we can't all be like Don Draper, who has millions of dollars and can be like, well, you know, he can probably live off that for the rest of his life if he needs to. If only we all had such privilege in our lives.
It would be a lot more freeing to know that you're walking out of a job to, like, millions of dollars, presumably, rather than being like, oh, I have to immediately find a different job that's slightly less soul-crushing. Oh, dear.
As you mentioned, like, the thing of Don Draper being a cool guy, that's the one thing he does that's really, I think, is the most aspirational aspects of his thing, that is the fact he realizes that his job is killing him and walks away. Like, all the rest of it, he's obviously self-medicating, like, with alcohol, drugs, and women. That's not the part that's aspirational, but I did find it interesting. That's what people thought. And, like, one note I made, because when I was rewatching the pilot a few times, so it's like we're getting close to the end here, I thought we can mention this, of, I just wrote, everything smells. And I asked Lucas about this before recording, and I wonder what your thoughts are on it, Jose, if somebody watched the entire season, of how bad do you think the world of Mad Men smells?
Oh, I'm sure it smells horribly. That was actually something they wanted to capture in the show. There's a moment in the pilot where Don lies down and he looks up and you can see a fly in the light fixture. That was one of the additions they actually made to the script. And the whole point of that is to show, like, this is a real world. We're not going to, like, paper over all the niceties or paper over all the garbage. It's all there. It all stinks. And we're going to show it all to you right here. Like, I can't imagine being around Don Draper and not having to smell, like, stale tobacco or booze on his breath. Moment you're around him.
Yeah.
But
got me of, like, the first episode when I was watching it. So Don Draper, he wakes up. He goes to work. He immediately cracks open a bottle of whiskey. He has, throughout the day, about 3 or 4 bourbons, smokes an entire packet of cigarettes. He goes to the meeting with that lady. He eats a shrimp cocktail in the middle of the day.
With a Bloody Marys.
And a Bloody Mary in the middle of the day. He goes to a club, presumably eats a steak, has a few more whiskies, goes to see his mistress. In his mistress, the first thing he does, pours himself another whiskey, smokes a few cigarettes, spends the night, wakes up in the morning, smokes another cigarette. You don't see him shower, you see him put his outfit straight back on and leave. Gets to the office, changes his shirt to the one that he's already got prepared, but otherwise puts the same suit back on, immediately pours himself another whiskey and a cigarette. It's like, he must smell so bad. He's not showered. Like, imagine, like, just the beer sweats, but, like, the alcohol sweats he has. You don't see him brush his teeth?
Yeah, and, like, some of that could be implied off-screen, but, like, the idea that, just constantly drenched. I was surprised that all of their shirts were white, because just, you'd imagine they'd all been, like, yellowed by the amount of cigarettes.
Well, they're always buying new ones and replacing them.
I guess so.
There's that one episode in season 1, a few episodes after that, when the elevator is actually broken down
And yes, I was going to mention this episode.
Don and Roger have to climb all the way up, and this is where we finally see them like falling to pieces, where they have to go up several flights of stairs, and it ends with just because they had oysters at lunch, and Roger just like vomits in front of some clients, and it's one of the few times the characters seem a lot more mortal and human. And you realize how much of this is just like hanging on by a thread. If you just like push them a little bit, make them exert themselves just a little bit, and then they just fall to pieces.
Well, the thing about that lunch is that it's not just that they have oysters. So Luca, Sam's going to now tell you their meal. They have like three or four martinis that are all gin. They ask them to go easy on the vermouth, an entire portion of oysters. Then before they go back, they have another portion of oysters and some more martinis. Ooh. Then they have a cheesecake and a few more martinis. And then they walk back in the blazing hot sun up a flight of stairs. Like, you know, like, that's like that's the midday meal.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I don't know how anyone could watch this and think it's aspirational. That seems like if someone sat me down and drink five martinis and eat 24 oysters and a cheesecake, I think, okay, so is Mr. Beast going to jump out and pay me to do this? This is torture. What is this? It's awful.
When you think about it, it's kind of amazing they don't look worse. Like,
well, I guess, like, yeah, Don Draper looks, he's too handsome a man. I was like, John Hamm is way too handsome, especially like when he takes his shirt off and he's in like great shape. It's like, you wouldn't be in good shape. He doesn't exercise. He's winded going up a flight of stairs and he lives off whiskey and steak.
I can only imagine that the people in real life that were like the quote unquote mad men did not look quite as great as the on-screen versions.
Well, I imagine if you took a picture of them, they'd look great. But in real life, yeah, they probably look like an absolute mess.
Yeah.
And what survives in the future, right? It's the pictures, right? So that's how we're going to remember them.
And they were ad men, so they knew how to take good photos. They wore good suits. Which, yeah, it's just, that's the one note I made about that first episode is that everything smells. Just when I was watching, I was just thinking to myself, like, if I was in that office right now, I'd have to leave. Like, is the window open? No, the window's closed. And there's not like air conditioning. There's not deodorant. Because they mentioned in a later episode, they advertise deodorant. So they've just invented spray-on deodorant. It's like, it didn't exist before. Oh, no.
I guess people just kind of got used to it. You get used to the fact that everyone stinks all the time.
Yeah, and I don't like remember the smell necessarily, but we, at least in the UK, like, a lot of the time, like, you'll go into like a pub as a family and like there'll be, you know, there used to be places that were like the smoking areas and stuff, or like the whole pub might just be smoking, like back in the 90s. And I still have like vague memories of just going into pubs when we were kids and stuff, and like going in for, you know, some food or something, and the entire place would just be smoke, and just it was obviously like there was a smoking ban in the UK, what, like mid noughties, I think.
I believe so, yes.
It obviously changed a lot of things, but yeah, it was so prevalent and so normalized to just walk into buildings and the entire place was just smoke.
I think it's to the point where, speaking about advertising and photographs, there's a discussion about how it's actually made sports photography worse, because a lot of the more iconic shots of like sports, for example, like the Muhammad Ali knockout shot, like the iconic one of him standing over his opponent with his arm, is like this blue tint in the air. And that's because there was smoking allowed in the arena, and it effectively acted just like a reflector, which made like just the pictures look really good.
Oh.
And they talk about how you don't really have that anymore because smoking indoors is banned. So sports shots just don't look as good, which is weird, right? Of like, that's not even rose tinted glasses. That's tobacco stained glasses. But it exists, and it's very strange. And I guess, yeah, Jose, we've got to our hour mark now. Is there anything else you'd like to mention about Mad Men or anything that has like sprung to mind to end on? Any closing thoughts?
Here's one thing I didn't get to include the video that I thought was really interesting that kind of ties back to something we were saying earlier about the power of advertising. The sales for Lucky Strike cigarettes, which are mentioned extensively in the series, they went up by something like 60 or 70% after Mad Men aired. and they believe
the first episode is talking about how they cause cancer.
If you
the
were
whole
like,
point of the episode is that they're no different from any other cigarette.
Yeah, but you know, people have still gotten by them.
But that's not even like a joke me and Lucas make a lot. It's like, that's not even subtext. That's the text. They say it out loud in the episode of like, it's the same product.
Yeah, and one of the things that made me laugh is just they're in the room pitching and they all light up and like one person coughs and then they all start coughing and they're like, isn't it insane that they say these things kill you? Yeah. Oh, dear.
It's the power of illusions.
I didn't know
delusions,
that.
I guess.
I didn't realize people actually bought Lucky Strike cigarettes. The first episode is them saying, oh, these things suck, they kill you, and they're the same as any other cigarette.
Also, the slogan Don comes up with has been in use since like 1916, I think, is when Lucky Strike started using it. So it's all lies.
Oh.
It's all lies.
It's ironic for a show. Well, I guess reality is whatever advertising says it is.
It is true. And I guess, obviously, you know, a thing to mention is that if you'd like a much more kind of well-written, deeper dive on Mad Men, then you can go and watch Jose's video on it. But Jose, we never really got round to you just like introducing yourself and your channel a little bit. So if you want to give yourself a little plug, go ahead.
Yes.
Sure. I am Jose from a channel also named Jose. My channel, I talk
speaking
about...
Speaking of marketing.
Pardon me?
Speaking of marketing, I think me and Lucas mentioned this previously. Of like, if you the fact your channel's just your name, that's so good. Just, one more. If you're on YouTube and type in Jose, you pop up. Like, that's fantastic. Speaking about marketing.
Well, I can't claim to have come up with that idea. A few other YouTube creators have done something similar. And I just figured, you know, I'm going to do this from the get-go because I don't know what to call my channel. And this seems simple and effective. But yeah, my channel is about long, deep dives into classic TV shows, mostly sitcoms. But as we can see with Mad Men, I'm branching out into other types of television as well. I also talk about various right-wing and reactionary politics and how they're bad, I should clarify, in many other videos as well.
Yeah, and one other video of yours that I enjoyed watching and like got a lot of value out of that I want to mention is your Superstore video, where just, you know, I enjoyed watching Superstore. I thought it was a pretty well-made show, you know, some highs and some lows, but I then Carl mentioned your channel and I went and watched your Superstore video and I was like, oh, there's so much like research that's gone into this and like deeper talks about just the, you know, I kind of like almost the importance of identity within the show that I wasn't really aware of and how much they let the kind of casted actors influence each role and kind of make themselves and their own identities more important to the characters. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I had never seen Superstore until I decided to make a video on it, but that was one of the things that really leapt out at me because as I was watching it, the characters felt very real and organic and natural. And then when you look at the casting and you realize like, oh, they actually fashion these characters around the actors. Certainly not the first time that's ever happened, but on Superstore, it seemed to go a little bit further by incorporating more of like the actor's identity and not just sort of a superficial detail, but something a little more deeply connected to who they were as people. And I think it really helped them perform their very best on the show.
Yeah, it's literally got someone who I noticed that was in Mad Men in it. Like the one of the main actors is like in like 20 odd episodes of Mad Men, which surprised me.
Yeah, Ben Feldman is Michael Ginsberg, the copywriter Don is made very insecure by and tells off in that famous moment in the elevator that he doesn't think about him at all. I won't spoil how Ginsberg's story ends, but it's incredibly disturbing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm probably going to end up going back and cause Mad Men's one of those shows where, as I mentioned, got a few seasons in and it kind of dropped off and just there's so much content that exists these days, including content talking about other content like your own, that just it fell off my radar, but it's always been there. So
I'm now excited to watch Mad Men and then watch your video on Mad Men, Jose. It's going to be a journey because like I forget that just there's so many shows that are just like, hey, each episode's an hour long and there's 13 episodes per season and then there's like 7 seasons. It's going to be a journey.
Well, that's a lot of content.
You know, I've seen more and more comments of people saying that under my videos, and I genuinely love it. I wouldn't be talking about these shows if I didn't think they're worth people's time. Mad Men in particular is something special, and I hope, you know, when you finish your watch, you'll be able to watch my video and get a little bit more out of it.
Definitely, yeah, that's one thing that I always enjoy doing, is like tracking down videos after I've watched or rewatched a show and get like more information and different perspectives on it and stuff, and like you do a great job of breaking those things down.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, so for everyone watching at home, still listening along, just yeah, go check out those videos linked below, and just thank you to Jose for joining us for this discussion about Mad Men.
Sure, it was an absolute pleasure.